All right. And Dana's here. Yes, indeedy.
Where do I put my...
Oh, yeah. A little air would be good. Okay, ladies. Let's see. We have been started our lesson on long-suffering. This one's not an easy... Being long-suffering is not an easy thing for any of us to do. By any means, we will not achieve this. We will not achieve this to the degree that the Lord is long-suffering with us. But at least if we remember how long-suffering He is with you, then you can be a little more long-suffering with someone else. That's basically my goal. That's what I want to achieve. The Lord is so long-suffering with me that I just need to be a little more long-suffering. Yes, Miss Dorothy. Exactly. I know. I mean, God is able to do anything, and if we in turn have to, don't do that. Well, his daddy's been gone, and he just got home, and yeah, he's not having it.
Is that why he's crying?
Mm-hmm. But being long-suffering, I mean, God is able to do anything. And in His righteous judgment, when we don't do what we're supposed to do or what we should be doing, God has every right to, He could just take us out, in a sense. But He's not. He wants us to learn and mature, and He's very long-suffering with us. And when we snap at people, when we are very frustrated by how people are in our lives, just stop for a minute and remember how long-suffering the Lord is with you, and just endure. You know, it's like He told us that we would have to endure things for His sake. We're going to have to, you know, there are people that are not going to understand what we're all about. Even our families, especially if we have unsaved family members, they don't understand our commitment to the Lord. They don't understand why we do the things that we do. And so it's necessary, if we are going to be a witness to them, that we have some patience and long-suffering, not only with them, but, you know, even strangers that we come in contact with, that people that we work with. You know, we're always coming across people that have a lot of negative things going on in their lives, and so it comes out in the way they speak to you, the way they act. And so we just all need to kind of, you know, take it easy and just try not to let things, you know, bother us. I mean, we can rant and rave to the Lord about them, which is good, as opposed to ranting and raving at them. So we left off that we were talking about patience. Yeah, I've been there, done that already. Yes. Oh, that's good. Okay, and okay, so. Oh, I see. So the in question five, it asks, there's a name of a man in the Bible who endured more trials than most other men, and everybody knows who that is, and that is Job. So if everybody would turn to Job, it's right before Psalms in your Bible. We're going to look at a few passages and some other passages about Job and the type of... It's like the Bible tells us that, and you pray for patience, expect tribulation, because tribulation worketh patience. So if you keep praying for patience and your life is in an uproar, it's exactly because you're praying, you're actually asking for it. You're praying for that. So in the book of Job, most of us know who Job is. Job was a man that loved the Lord, followed the Lord in everything he did. But Satan decided that he wanted to tempt Job because he thought that God was protecting him, and that if he took his protection away, Job would, you know, be like everybody else and, you know, curse God. Well, the Lord said, okay, you can touch the things that he has. So Satan took everything away from him. His all his cattle were stolen or killed, and his children were killed, and everything Job had was gone in a blink of an eye. And he still was praising the Lord. So Satan went back to the Lord and said, okay, well, now you need to take your protection away from him himself so that, you know, I can prove to you that, you know, this is what's going on. So God said, okay, you can touch his body, but you cannot take his life that belongs to me. So God just stepped back a little bit, and he allowed, because he knew what we were like, why, God, why did you do this? But God knew Job's heart already. He knew how he was going to be, because God knows everything. We just don't understand the concept of God allowing this to happen. So then Satan causes all these things to happen to Job's physical body. He had boils, and he was very depressed and in a state of depression because of all the things that had gone on. And so, but Job comes to himself when in that time, and he really sees who he is, and it really shows his patience. So there's a verse in James chapter 5 that I want to read. You can stay in Job because we're going to go back to that. I just want to read this verse in James 5:11. It says, behold, we count them happy which endure. Ye have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. Well, that pitiful means he has to go along with this tender mercy. The Lord still was looking out for Job, even in all of this that was going on. He never was far away from Job. Job just didn't feel God's presence because of the things that were going on in his life. But the Lord never strayed far from Job because of his walk with him. And so in chapter 1, in the next verse, or the next question, it says, so why do we have a hard time being patient with God when we're going through trials? Well, good question, exactly. Because we live in the here and now, we want answers now. We don't want to wait for them. We don't want to have to endure anything to make us grow. And that's what patience does, or trials do. It grows our faith and everything else. And so we want deliverance from these things because we feel like we shouldn't have to. And it's painful. and we shouldn't have to go through anything bad. You know, it's like we're serving the Lord. Why should we have these trials and troubles and tribulations? It's like, you know, our life should be a cakewalk. Well, no. Then you won't do anything for the Lord if your life is like that, because you'll just get in this little happy place. And we have to get out of our comfort zone. And that's why God allows trials and tribulations in our lives, so that we step out of ourselves and we're forced to do something, just like we've been learning in the book of Acts. Here the apostles had all of the teaching of the Lord. They had the Holy Spirit now, and they were ready to go out and preach. But where did they go? Nowhere. They stayed right in Jerusalem. They stayed right with the people that they had around them. And God had to cause persecution in their lives to make them go out like he told them to. They were comfortable. They had everything that they needed. They were going to stay right here. And basically they had them and their four and no more. And they weren't reaching anybody else because they weren't going anywhere. Well, we get in that stagnant place too, where we're comfortable. I know how to do all of this. I don't want to learn how to do something else, or I don't want to have to be forced to go and share with other people, or step out of my comfort zone and teach a class because the pastor asked me to. That was a little terrifying when he first mentioned it to me. I'm like, oh, I had to pray about this. But the more I've gotten, you know, it's like, okay, Lord, you and I guess are a majority. We can do this. And I'm having a good time. So it's like, it was a good thing that the Lord pushed me a little bit to get me out of, you know, I've taught before, but I've taught children. And I haven't taught ladies. And it's like, I've substituted a couple of times for, you know, different people, but not to be, you know, the whole class was on me. So it's like, yay. I'm like, Pastor, give me a book. I need a book. I can't do it all by myself because I won't know what to think about. So it's like, give me a book and I can go through a book with somebody. And so now he likes that idea so much that everybody's doing a book. So it was like, oh, yay. So our hard trials, our hard things, they're a reason for us to grow. Trials and tribulations, they grow our faith, they grow our patience, they grow all of the fruit of the Spirit, practicing our love and our joy and our peace. And Sharon and I were talking the other day, it's like, long suffering. What do you need to have to be able to be long suffering? You have to have the first three that we talked about already: the love, joy, and peace. You can't be long suffering if these are not attributes in your life. And we all have the capability. The fruit of the Spirit comes when you're saved. So we can't say, oh, well, I'm going to have love, but I'm not going to have any peace. Or I'm going to, you know, I'll practice long suffering, but I'm not going to be kind. You know, no. It's a package. But there's a reason why they're in the order that they're in. Because you have to have love first. Love, then joy, then peace. And now, because we've had all three and we understand what they are, long suffering makes sense. And it's easier to apply it into your life with those that you come into contact with. So in question 7, God took everything that Job had, but Job was patient with God. What was Job's attitude? So we're in chapter 1, verse 21. And Job says, and said, naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Right there is Job's attitude in a nutshell. Everything I had came from the Lord. He wants to take it away. Okay. It was his to take away because he gave it to me. And I came into this world with nothing, and I'm going to go out of this world with nothing. And what I have in the interim between birth and death is a blessing from the Lord. And if he wants to take it away, that's his decision. And so right there, Satan should have realized that, you know, this isn't going to work. And it's like, okay, fine. He's not going to, you know, be like that. And so this is Job's attitude. And then in 2:10, he says, but telling him to, in verse 9, then said his wife unto him, dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. Really wonderful person. But he said unto her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God? And shall we not receive evil? In all this did not Job sin with his lips. So he maintained his integrity that he had throughout his whole life. Here, you know, it's like, you know, how would you feel about that? You know, it's like, here you think you're going to have your wife on your side and she tells you to curse God and die. It's like, really? That's not helpful. This is, you know, we're going through a trial here. And in a sense, she was going through this with Job because not only her livelihood was gone, her children were gone, her husband was in this predicament. And but she doesn't have the same attitude about God as Job did. And really, this is about the only thing that she says in here. She you know, there's not much mention of her, you know, other than at the end when Job has even more children than he had in the first place, and he ends up with more than he. So she still had to be around, because then all of a sudden she's having more children in the next 100-plus years that Job lived after all of this happened, you know? So it's like, oh, okay.
It makes you wonder, where was she? Because she had to be suffering just as much. Even though she questioned, she was still there.
Right. She was still, you know, but what was she what was she doing during Job's ordeal that he was going through, the rest of the chapter? We don't know what happened in the rest of the book of Job. You don't really
say that she was taking care of him,
right? So we don't know, but so we can't say that God is only going to give us good things. We can't say that God allows things in our life for a reason, for us to change, for us to grow, he shows us things, you know, to get things out of our lives. This is a negative. You don't need to do this. Okay, so on the next page, on question 8, it says, describe the change in Job's attitude from 2:10, which we said, where he, you know, said, we're, you know, we get good and evil from God. And then in chapter 3, 1 through 3, it says, after this, Job opened his mouth and cursed his day, the day. And Job spake and said, let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said, there is a man-child conceived. And then in verse 11, why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? So now Job is turning it inward. He's looking at why is all of this happening to me? Why was I even born if I'm going to have to go through? So in his depressed state, in his situation, Job's turning things inward. And he was wanting to not have been born, then none of this would have happened. But then he would have had none of the blessings either that he had from the Lord. It's like, I know I have felt that way. I've tried not to stay in that position, but I have in a few depressing times in my life felt like, oh, what's the point? You know, why am I even here? I wouldn't have ever done anything to myself, but I was just like, why? I've had this kind of conversation with myself. Why was I even born? And then you think that's kind of like the wrong thing to say. So then you start thinking about, then I think of that movie with Jimmy Stewart, the one at Christmas. Yeah, It's a Wonderful Life, where he actually gets to see what his life and what other people's lives would have been like if he would have never been born. And it's like, whoa, yeah. It's like my mother would never have had a child that she so desperately wanted. You know, it's like all of these things and all of these other people that your lives touch, but all I'm worried about is me. You know, it's like I helped a lot of people, or I touched a lot of people, or, you know, it's like I made a difference in somebody's life somewhere. You know, it's like, wow, if I would have never been here, you know, what would their life be like? And so it kind of gets you kind of outside of that. And I think in Job's going on through this and listening to those crazy friends that he had and who were no help whatsoever to him, you know, and so, but Job didn't learn patience among the things that he had, among his flocks or his camels or with his children. But he learned it when he was sitting there in the ashes, when he was scraping himself, when his heart was heavy from the death of his children. That was how the patience grew in his heart. And she puts it down as like a pearl. Okay, when an oyster is growing a pearl, it's because of much tribulation that's going on inside that oyster. Things get in and things come out, and it's in a state of turmoil. And that's when this beautiful pearl happens. And it's such a beauty. Well, that's kind of what God's doing. He's stirring things up and causing the good to rise. So just kind of picture that you may not be able to see it right in the moment, but have faith, endure the tribulation that you're going through, stay close to the Lord, don't walk away from Him, because that's the worst thing that you can do. But what do we do? What do we do first? We turn our backs. We say, okay, I give up. We don't want to stay close to the Lord because we're in a quandary about, you know, what do we do? Well, turning our back on the Lord is the worst thing that we can do. We need to stay very, very close to Him. Even though Job was, you know, sitting in the dirt and the ashes, and the Lord wasn't far from him. He wasn't turning his back on the Lord. He just was kind of caught up in the moment of what he was going through. And you have a question? That's true.
Because, you know, you take a true, good, and faithful man.
Right.
Even though it says God never tests you. Now, God doesn't test you, but He let the devil test you.
Right.
He let the devil test a true and faithful man. And I don't know if I can ever understand that.
Why?
Why would you do that to a true and faithful man?
To make the pearl, to make him better.
Why does he need to do that?
And allow others to see.
But to others to allow others to see that Job was faithful. That and it was all the things that are in God's word are for us to glean something out of. We see, I mean, David went through, you know, why was Saul so bent on killing David and chasing him all over the countryside because he was jealous. But David was a man after God's own heart. He could have put a stop to it right at the very beginning. And
David sinned.
Well, that was after he became king.
Yeah, but he sinned. Job was a true faith. Like I said, I've talked to pastor. I've gone.
But we don't know if Job ever. I mean, we can't say that Job never sinned because he's not Jesus.
Okay.
You know,
he didn't live a perfect man.
No, Job was not a perfect man.
The pastor had to make me come out of Job because
you were just yeah.
So just
I mean, even in chapter 2, verse 3, the Lord tells Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil? And still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause." Okay, Satan wanted to actually take Job out. And God said, no, you can't do that because he belongs to me. But this perfect, Job was not perfect. Job was mature in his walk with the Lord. Perfect does not mean perfect. Because no man can be perfect. Only God can be perfect. Perfect means mature. In most instances that you read in the Word, it means. And Job was upright, but just because you're upright doesn't mean that you never have any faults or any. And even Job lists his faults when he's talking about himself and the things that he wasn't always. He had integrity and he lived his life to the best of his ability to do what the Lord wanted. But that doesn't make him someone that the Lord couldn't use to show other people, what was going on. So when we have our prayers go unanswered, or so we think they're unanswered, our confidence in the Lord weakens. And we may begin to demand answers from God. So what did Job ask God in Job 10? I'm going to go to Job chapter 10, verses 1 and 2. Okay, Job chapter 10, verse 1 and 2. Job says, "My soul is weary of my life. I will leave my complaint upon myself. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul. I will say unto God, do not condemn me. Show me wherefore thou contendest with me." And contendest me to where's the pro? What do you have against me? Not against me, but what's my fault? Show me what I've done wrong.
That's sin.
Well, no, not necessarily, but show me what I've done wrong. Contend. Let's look it up. Let's just look it up. Why not? We have the time. We have the book. So if I could spell, we would even be better. Consent. My book got, it's like water got spilled in my bag, and my book is like, all the pages are like weird now. It's like they don't want to turn. I can't spell today. What's wrong? There it is. Contendus. Right here. And this word, there is the only spot in the Bible that this word is. There's only one reference to contendus. It's in Job 10, verse 2. Only spot. All right. So, 73, 78. I got to go back here to the Greek. No, nope, not the Greek part. I am. But I got to go to the Hebrew side because it is in the Old Testament. Right?
Right.
Okay, so 73 something or other. Oh, great. 73, 78. Okay, 73, 78. Okay. It means to toss, to grapple, to wrangle, to hold a controversy, to defend, an adversary, to chide, complain, contend, debate, lay wait, plead, rebuke, strive. That's what contendest. So God wasn't, or Job's asking, what's the main issue? What's do you have debate with me about? What do you have to, what are you rebuking me about? What is it that I've done that has brought this on? Contendest. It's, and it, I mean, that's the only time that it's mentioned is in this one verse right here. So God, or Job is asking, so it's basically, what's the issue, Lord, that you have with me that I need to fix, is what Job's asking. Not anymore, he's not asking, Lord, I wish I died or I'd never been born. Now Job's coming out of that state that he was in and saying, okay, there's something in my life that isn't right. Okay, Lord, what is it that you want me to fix? What is it that you have a beef with me about, in a sense? But God is silent throughout the book of Job until you get to chapter 38. Okay, so we have his friends talking to him, and Job has several chapters where he's talking to the Lord. And all of a sudden, we hear from the Lord. And when God asks us to suffer long, and he's also silent, we're not sure we're getting an answer from him. We're praying, and we're not seeing any answers. We're not feeling any answers. We just aren't getting any results from, you know, I mean, there's people been praying for spouses, you know, for years to get saved, and you don't hear, and you're not getting any answer. And then all of a sudden, after 25 years, they get saved. Well, it's not that God put you on the back burner and he was never listening to you. It wasn't time. And it's all done in God's time and not in our time. But that's where we see. So when God is silent, what are we prone to think about? That God's not listening.
Or that there is no God.
Right. I mean, a lot of people are like, well, God never answers my prayers.
Sometimes he answers silently. He answers no.
Exactly. And there's three ways that God answers. No, yes, or wait. And that's the one that we have the hardest time with. God can say no, and I can move on. I don't like it, but I can move on. But when he says wait, and I don't have any kind of answer, it's like, no, I don't like that part. And so we decide in our little pea brains that God doesn't care about us anymore. He's not interested in what I have to say or what I'm asking about. You know, I've heard people say, you know, and where is all this coming from? It's not coming from the Lord. It's coming from Satan. He's putting all of these things in your mind. God's too busy for your pity problem. You know, you don't just worry about, you know, move on. You make a decision. And then that's when we get ourselves in trouble, because then we think, well, God, of course I know better. And I can figure this out by myself. Yeah, okay. And that works so well that let's keep doing it. You know, it's like we tend to do that. We tend to take the reins because we're not getting an answer. And God isn't saying, okay, make this decision on your own. Go right ahead. When I'm not listening. Yeah, well, God knows everything. There's nothing that you can say that's going to make a difference in that predicament. But we all go there. We all say, and even the best one is that maybe I'm not saved. That's why God's not answering my problems. Well, that's coming straight from the devil. He wants you to feel that way. He wants you to feel like you're insignificant to God, that it doesn't matter what you are asking for, even if it's a little small thing. To you, it's a big thing. And to God, it's important because He loves us. And, you know, so don't, we've all done it, but try not to go there in your thought process of God's not interested in what I have to say. God only answers pastors, you know, because He's the man of God. Of course, all His prayers get answered. Well, no, they don't. And they don't always get answered the way He wants them to be answered either. We're all in the same. God loves all of us. If we're saved, God loves all of us the same. He died for all of us. But most of us have all experienced some kind of dark time in our lives where we couldn't see God's hand at work, and it seemed like He had turned His back on us. And basically, question 11 just has you express, you know, how you felt. And it was very hard to pray. I had a hard time. I knew that that's what I needed to do. But it was very difficult because I just felt so alone. And it was bad. I didn't want to go to church. I didn't want to pray. I didn't want to do anything that had anything to do with the Lord. But I knew that I couldn't go there and I couldn't stay in that position because it was going to be very detrimental to me. And through some help from very good friends that saw what I was going through and understood what I was going through, they helped me get past that few weeks where I was, I mean, it's like I was there physically in body, but I wasn't there at all. And it took a little while for me to realize that God never left me. I was the one that was walking away. And it was hard to get past some of that. And then I had a situation where I was kind of feeling like Job, but this was even before we were saved. And, you know, it's like, okay, I don't care what you do. You know, I wasn't even, you know, I didn't know how to talk to the Lord. I didn't know who He was or anything else, but I felt like, okay, what's the point of even being here? And yeah, that took a little while to get over too. And I didn't have any, you know, we did have this, it was after our first baby died, and we did have a young man that lived next door to us that he ministered to us in a way that was totally different than anything that I... And he was studying at the seminary there in Louisiana where we lived. And he told us that someday you're going to understand why the Lord allowed this to happen. And he just kind of left it at that. And 3-4 years later, no, it's more than that, it was 5, about 7 years later, when we did get saved, I could actually say, okay, Lord, that I understand why that time frame was, because that was one of several path changes that the Lord put up roadblocks. And thank you, Rodney. And said, okay, stop going this direction. You have to totally change your path And God just guided us to the point where we could accept him as our Savior. And looking back on that, I mean, it was like, seriously, I could see them. I could see what the roadblocks were, and I could see how God's hand was on us, and he was directing us, and he was guiding us, and he was leading us on this different pathway than the destructive one that we had been on before. And in a lot of ways, that's what the Lord is doing with Job. And in chapter 28 or 38, when Job's or God starts talking to him, 38 through 41 is basically God talking to Job and saying, really, Job? It's like, were you there when I made the world? Were you there when I put the stars in the heavens? Were you there when everything, and I put everything into motion? It's like, I'm the one that can you do these things that I can do? And so he told Job that he was in control of everything. He made everything. And who was Job, in a sense, to ask why this was happening? And then there's a, it says, what rebuke did God give Job in 40 verses 1 and 2? So that's to be the last thing we're going to do. Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, shall he that contendeth, that's a different form, but there's that same word, with the Almighty instruct him, he that reproveth God, let him answer it. Okay, so here Job is basically telling the Lord, but why did you do all of this? And he's basically saying, because I'm God and I can. It's like, I made everything. I know everything. And he's just showing Job his deity and his all-knowingness, in a sense. He's telling Job that, and then, you know, Job's asking, you know, that, you know, in a sense, he's trying to correct the Lord. And it's, you know, it's like, but why did you make me if all of this was going to happen? Well, God made him because he knew that this was going to happen, but he also knew what was going to, the outcome. That's what we don't ever see, is the outcome that's going to happen. We have, that's why we have to have faith and patience and long-suffering, not only in our trials, but long-suffering with other people, to wait to see what's at the end of the path that the Lord has us on, Miss Carlene.
Job and I just...
Well, I think when I get stuck in something like the Bible or something, you see going around where people who are being good and are Christians are living without a salary, and you see somebody who drinks and goes completely inappropriate.
Well, exactly.
He's an alcoholic being promoted and making money, mm-hmm. and buying cars, and then you're looking at all these people like, they have the character and the moral and the intelligence to do this. Why is this going?
Right. What?
But you know, we're cursed. The world's cursed by sin.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we follow God and we're made perfect in God, in a sense, we're still stuck in this pit of sin.
We're still stuck in this.
It's messed up because we messed up in the Garden of Eden. All of us would have done it probably soon. And it's just messed up.
Exactly.
And
but
like Job, it doesn't make sense.
Right.
But he's still living on earth cursed by sin.
Right.
Where Satan has free reign.
Exactly.
And it doesn't make sense. And it's not fair. I mean, the more we learn about God, the more we know he's just. And it's frustrating.
Yes.
I'm frustrated with people I see around me that I get with, you know.
The Christians,
I
mean,
I should cast the beam out of my own eye because I'm not perfect either, but it's frustrating to see those things go. And when there's good people doing wrong, you feel like they're not doing wrong.
Exactly. And the world, for the most part, doesn't make sense when you're trying to live your life for the Lord, because you see the unsaved, and you know, they've got everything that they possibly want. Well, that's because Satan wants them to not need God. And so he's going to give them everything their heart desires. And then they're going to think, oh, well, look how wonderful I am. I don't need the Lord. Why would I need the Lord? I've got everything that, you know, I could possibly want. And, you know, and they think it's a blessing from the Lord when it's not a blessing from the Lord that they are getting. And because you don't have things and you're suffering doesn't mean that the Lord is angry with you. It just means that the Lord is trying to teach you something. There's something in your life that Lord is trying to get your attention on. And so we just all need to stay close to the Lord. And now we